Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Well, there's nothing like spring in Wisconsin, and you know, when it's spring, it's a good time to talk with Mike Beno. He's back with us once again, editor of Our Wisconsin, a magazine that's packed with stories, photos, recipes, and they're all about things that make Wisconsin unique. So as we visit with Mike, you might think about some of your favorite places or events to celebrate in the spring. Let us know about them. Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Mike Beno with us by phone. Mike, hi. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
You're welcome, Larry. Thanks for having me. You mentioned spring. I wouldn't know it by looking out the window here in Manitowish Waters. It's snowing a little bit now. It was snowing yesterday, snowing the day before, and I have hope because the dog sleds with the pemmican deliveries are making it through.
Well, you know, you always have beautiful photos in your magazine, and this issue certainly no exception. They were obviously, those were taken last year, and I imagine you're trying to get some spring photos right now for next year.
Yeah, that's for sure. We work with about 30 to 40 pro photographers who are out there right now beating the bushes for us for next year. The cover of this particular magazine that I have in front of me, it doesn't look like anything in Manitowish Waters right now, but with the trees budding out, I love to go turkey hunting down near Muscadet, and it's just a wonderful place to be, to sit and relax in the spring with the woods greening up all around you, and I can't wait to do that again.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Actually, we'll be talking about turkeys and turkey hunting next week Wednesday on the show, so looking forward to that. Well, I had a chance to go through your April-May issue of Our Wisconsin. One story that struck me was about an 11-year-old in La Crosse who's been doing some pretty amazing work. Tell us about him.
Oh, Jonah. Jonah Larson, 11 years old, in La Crosse. He's caused a stir. I think USA Today and ABC TV and NPR even have found him. We did a story, too, and it was very neat because he couldn't wait to show up in this magazine. He called us from La Crosse a few times after our writer and photographer went to visit with him, Clay Reines from Coon Valley. But Jonah took up, amazingly, took up crochet at age 5. Now, the interesting thing about that is he saw some knitting needles and some craft items that his aunt had sent there to the home, and he asked his mother, at age 5, what are these? What are they used for? She said, crochet. He said, what's crochet? She said, why don't you look online? Well, it turns out this young man who was adopted from Ethiopia and was brought here and living in La Crosse had never seen it. He went online and looked, and he's a prodigy. Before he even knew how to make a stitch, before he knew how to read a pattern, he watched the mechanics of it, probably a YouTube video or two, and he instantly seized it. He knew the mechanics, and now he has made thousands of pieces. He has invented cowls. He's making throws, pillows, afghans, you name it. And he's got a following through his little website and business now at age 11 called Jonah's Hands. Hundreds of thousands of crafters around the world are into crochet, have adopted him. They're fawning over him. He's got, as his mother Jen says, thousands of grandmothers and new aunties all over the world. And he's got customers and fans in Malta, Lebanon, England, Canada, and they're sending him loads of skeins of yarn. People he's never met are shipping them to La Crosse to see what he can turn out.
He does some beautiful work. I mean, you've got some great photos of some of him and then some of his work as well. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, you name it. It's colorful, and while he's talking, he crochets 4 hours a day. While he's talking, his hands are just flying. He's not paying attention to what he's doing. He admits that he's a bit of a troublemaker in school because he was so far advanced he would finish everything early. So the teacher said, "Bring your crochet stuff." So he would start crocheting, and when the other kids finished up, now they're into it as well. But he's never been to his birth country of Ethiopia, and he is sending money and helping them. Yeah. He's a kind-hearted young man.
Great story in there. Our guest today, Mike Beno, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. Questions or comments for him? I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. And let's take a call. Dave in Augusta, we'll turn to you. Hi, Dave.
Well, hello, Larry, and guest. I heard the promo with Jill talking about calling with some ideas and what you'd like to do on the weekend in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
What my wife and I have discovered is the joy of visiting old water mills, woolen mills. We were lucky to have one about 4 miles from our farm in Augusta. It's called the Dells Mill, which is it's historic. It's really a cool place. What we found by visiting the mills of Wisconsin is the quietness, and they're set back off the beaten path. And these are just fantastic buildings, and most of them are over 100 years old. We just like taking photos of them and getting the history. Just something to do on the weekend.
Boy, that sounds pretty cool. Mike, I can't remember if you've done a story on the historic water mills of Wisconsin.
Not individual ones. We have certainly published photos of some of the more common ones. And it escapes me right now. There's one near Black Earth that's very popular. But that's a good idea. Dave, thank you for that tip. We should go out and do a little bit of history on these because not only, as you say, they're an example of industry that is amazingly quiet for a change. And also, yes, they're great places for photos. This mill race doesn't exist anymore, but it just comes to mind because I love the story. The old chair factory was on the river there near Grafton, and in the 1920s, up above that chair manufactory, was Paramount Recording Studios, and that was where many blues musicians came from the Mississippi Delta by train to make old 1978 records.
Wow.
And the history tied up with that early industry is something that is very interesting, and Dave, we do need to pursue more of that.
Yeah, Dave, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, you know, we all have places that feel like home to us, and one of your contributors feels that way about a place in Madison, and I love that place as well. It's Picnic Point, and I, as an undergraduate student who was enamored with a young lady, I had my first kiss of that young lady on Picnic Point.
My goodness, what a wonderful memory. We'll stop right there.
Oh, man. When I read that story, that was the first thing that came to my mind was Irene,
well,
the young lady. Who we went together for a while and then we weren't. So, but that fine memory still lingers. And was it George Albert?
George Ebert.
Ebert,
and,
yeah.
I'm glad you got to wish Irene good night. sorry, that was a fast pitch. I couldn't help fat pitch. I couldn't help swinging. Yes, Picnic Point. It's 129 acres of wilderness, so to speak, in the middle of an urban area, and generations of students and faculty at UW and just Madisonians have gone out there and found a little bit of quiet time in this Peninsula reaching out into Lake Mendota. Yes, George Ebert, what's interesting to me, and the reason we put this story in was, yes, it's celebrating something that a lot of people remember and love. But this man lives in Paducah, Kentucky. He's originally from the Shawano area, but he has lived all over the world. He went to school at UW in 69, before he went to college, second grade through the eighth grade, his father was a member of the U.S. State Department, and his they lived in Egypt and Kenya for the 8 years of his growing up. Then he went into the Air Force after college, Texas, California, Greece. He served as an Arabic linguist in the military, interpreting transmissions from the Middle East. Then in the early 80s, an architecture career took him to Chicago, California, Hawaii, Florida, United Arab Emirates. The man's been all over the world, and he's seen the pyramids of Egypt, the Taj Mahal, Mount Kilimanjaro, the Acropolis, you name it. But he keeps coming back in his mind, as he says, to this little spit of land where he found some peace and quiet in the middle of Madison when maybe some work in academe was closing in on him. And I bet you there are some people there, Larry, who could call with a number of neat stories about the fun times they had at Picnic Point. One story he shared I just thought was great. It was the student who was low on rent money, apparently, and he was a forestry major, so he's quite comfortable in the woods, pitched himself a pup tent and lived out there for a while and came in and showered at the gyms and went to school, you know. there's got to be a lot of fun stories and memories. But, again, a world traveler who, among it all, has seen it all, comes back in his heart to a place in Wisconsin, simpler and a beloved place.
Yeah. Mike Beto, our guest, maybe you've got a memory about Picnic Point, or maybe you've got another story you want to tell us about some place that you've been in Wisconsin or would like to go, or maybe there's an event you would like to tell people about. I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jill Nadeau, our producer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking about the people, places, and events in Wisconsin today with our guest, Mike Beto. He is editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. Always great to have him come by. As we talk with him, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments or maybe an event you want to share about. Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's turn to Stella in Sturgeon Bay next. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I'm no longer living in Madison now, but I am a native Madisonian. And I participated in Brownie Scouts and Girl Scouts when I was a girl. And one of my fondest memories of Picnic Point is the Girl Scout day camp that I attended there. It was two-week sessions, weekdays, and I think I went for at least 2 years, maybe 3 years. It was for the Girl Scouts who were too young to go to the residential camp at Camp Blackhawk. And older than Brownies, because Brownie Day Camp was, I think, at Hoyt Park. I'm not sure.
But you love Picnic Point.
It was wonderful. And when I've gone back as an adult and visited Picnic Point, where we had the day camp was just kind of, when you went in the entrance, instead of going straight down the path toward the point, you go off to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And it was back in the woods.
Yeah. Stella, thank you so much for calling. That's a great story. And, you know, I'm just going to go right straight to Bill from Wausau because he has a story relating to Picnic Point as well. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
And what have you got for us?
Well, in 1969, I was a freshman in Madison. And in the spring, when the student riots were going full bore, the National Guard was on campus. My girlfriend and I went out to Picnic Point, get away from things one night. And we sat out there and watched the National Guard helicopters flying over campus with their searchlights and heard the sirens. And at one point, the helicopter came over the point, and we hid out under a crabapple tree to not be spotted.
Boy. Another story, you know, Mike, I imagine we could probably spend the whole show talking about Picnic Point here and the stories.
Yeah, I'd say so. Given the number of students that have come through there and been up and down the lakeshore path and out to the point, wonderful stories. I mean, Stella, I bet you Stella might have learned how to swim out there or enjoyed it at least, and now she's still near water in Sturgeon Bay. It's so many memories, you know, formulating our backgrounds, our childhoods, our young adulthood, and it's a part of Wisconsin that's treasured.
I once walked out there on New Year's Eve when I was probably around 21 years old and dug a hole in the ice and caught an 8-pound walleye.
Good for you.
All right. Oh, man. Well, let's take another call on a different topic here, I believe. Tom in the south of Milwaukee. Let's go to you now. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. It is still morning, yes. I just have a question for Mike. Has he ever thought about doing an article on all the different scout camps and YMCA camps around the state? There's got to be a million memories for people at those camps.
Okay. Just taking notes here. We have done some individual ones, okay? We've talked a little bit about Camp Manitouish up here, which is a 100-year-old YMCA camp. We've had some photos from them. I have as well a story in the works right now on the YCC camps, Youth Conservation Corps, which is sort of a junior version of the CCC camps, which we also have had some stories on. I think Jerry Apps just did a book on that, our good friend. Tom, some good ideas, because there are so many memories. Bear Paw Camp in Mountain, Camp Unalaya, not far away, Okano County, so near Suring, I believe. So, yeah, thank you for that. We haven't done a retrospective of many of them, but here and there in our summer issues, we hit the spots. And if you or somebody out there have a story, a recollection with a good, fun beginning, middle, and end, that's what we really look for. Spin a yarn with us. I invite you to send it in.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate the call. And he's probably, from the sound of his comments there, he probably does have a memory or two of that. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Well, I want to get to one other thing here, at least one other thing, probably a lot more than that. But when I was reading your issue, I learned something I had never heard of before, which are fidget mats. Talk about what they're for.
Well, what they're for is, unfortunately, I think one of the byproducts of us living longer is cases of dementia are increasing as we go through life for some people, and it touches many families. So a fidget mat is something that's, I think, a little bit of a new concept, and our field editor, Wayne Hartlich, and his wife, Gail, in Washington County, came to work on some of these fidget mats. And what they are is, picture something the size of a colorful placemat, and they sew sensory objects onto them, soft objects generally. Sometimes they're parts from leather purses, neckties, jewelry, ribbons, buttons, belts, zippers, anything that's safe, clean, and easily sewn down tight. Maybe even a stuffed toy, a small stuffed toy or something. But the idea is that all these colors, shapes, textures, they stimulate senses. They stimulate the sensory parts of the brain, and people who are suffering from dementia are sometimes very much enthralled with them. It soothes them and may help reinforce memory. Caregivers and therapists like to use them because not only can it soothe and calm a person, give them something to do with their hands, with their eyes, as part of their therapy. It opens conversation between the therapist or the caregiver and the patient, and it just brightens their day. And so the Hartliches, as I had mentioned, have gotten into this, and they've made more than 100 of them, and they delivered them to Becky Ainsworth, in particular, volunteer coordinator at Aurora Home Care in Hartford. She uses them in her work. Doctors use them in her work. And Wayne and Gail had a company tied into sewing. They made outerwear, fleece, jackets, and vests, and 20 years, and they had the cutting table, have the cutting tables and sewing machines and the knowledge, and they're heading toward retirement now. They're winding their business down, and he said they thought briefly, oh, this could be a way to make money, and then, no, we won't do that. We would never make money off of dementia sufferers. We're going to do this completely as volunteers, and now they're haunting every garage sale and rummage sale and flea market they can find to get doodads. So if you happen to see Wayne and Gail out there, you know, sometimes when people hear about what's going on, they say, take whatever you want. And it's a wonderful, worthy thing.
It really is. And you can actually, people who are interested maybe in following up on that, I know there's an email that Wayne and Gail are happy to have people contact them in.
You bet. Anybody with some gizmos to give, okay, take your pencil and write down. It's W. Hartlich, H-A-R-T-L-I-C-H, W. Hartlich, at yahoo.com.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story here. And another one that brought back, well, it didn't bring back memories because I wasn't alive then, but the Depression of the 30s created hobos all over, including in Wisconsin. And you've got a nice story on what things were like back then.
Yeah, the people who recall hobos, and they're around, they'd generally be in their 80s and 90s now, recall being fascinated with these wandering caravan of vagabonds that came through always on the rails, never stuck around long, never really caused problems. They were just looking for work. And we have a story by John Lee in Coon Valley about recollections in Vernon County back in the day. The hobos are generally tied in history and in our memories to the Depression, when perhaps 250,000 of them nationally hit the rails, a lot of them teens, some older, looking for work. And I once heard a hobo at a hobo convention say, never call a hobo a bum. Hobos are different from somebody who's just doesn't ever want to do any work. A hobo is always willing to do some work. Hoe fields, milk cows, chop wood, dig tobacco, harvest tobacco, whatever it is in Wisconsin, they would stop, ask for a meal, and maybe a little bit of help, and work for a while, and then move along. They predate, actually, the Depression of the 30s. There were depressions earlier in 1873 and 1879 in the United States, and hobos were hitting the rails back then. This particular place I'm talking about in Coon Valley, when the railroad came through in about 1907, they started showing up, and John Lee's friend, Ernie Tandy, told him many stories about these gentlemen who were very intelligent and resourceful. They carved whistles, they carved walking sticks with people's names in them, just for gifts, to give because they received a kindness, and they moved along. One other quick story. In Coon Valley, these kids, they met some of the hobos by the river who were swimming and cleaning up, and they came up with a business idea. Corn cob pipes were big back in that era when tobacco was raised in that part of Wisconsin, Southwest, and people used corn cob pipes, but they had to be broken in, mellowed. They had to be smoked a little bit, so they would go around town, these kids, and collect pipes, and the hobos would charge 50 cents to pre-smoke them, and they would take the pipes, go out on their vagabond route. They would come back some weeks or months later with the broken-in pipes and collect their 50 cents and move along, and the kids got a fee for doing the legwork.
That's a great, great story. Mike Bino, our guest from Our Wisconsin Magazine. Question or comment or story for him, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Pat in Green Bay emailed, wonders if the magazine has ever done anything on the Wisconsin Museum of Quilts and Fiber Arts in Cedarburg. It's in a beautiful historic old barn and farmstead. They have interesting classes for kids and adults, and, of course, outstanding exhibits throughout the year.
Pat, thank you for that tip. No, we have not done that, and that sounds like it's right up our alley, because we've done a lot. We talked about a little bit of fiber art, so to speak, here, and we've had numerous quilting stories. So thank you so much for that, Pat.
And an email from Laura and Chase, the border collie. Laura grew up in Oregon, Wisconsin. She now lives in Duluth. But her favorite Wisconsin place besides her parents' home is hiking the North Country Trail around Brule and taking her dog Chase to Wisconsin Point. Wisconsin Point is a gorgeous sand beach along Lake Superior, truly a gem of northern Wisconsin.
It is. Getting up to Lake Superior, I can't do enough of getting up to Lake Superior, and it's always a treat to go. And I haven't been on the trails there, but I know my dog, Chester, my assistant editor, Red Labrador, would be more than happy to come and romp with Chase.
Let's go back to the magazine for a minute. I thought there was a kind of a cool story, and I'll bet a number of our listeners remember the reptile farm near Baraboo. I actually think I remember it. What can you tell us about it?
My favorite story in the issue, but I couldn't put it way far up front because I know that snakes are a little bit of a turnoff to some people, and we had a lot of squirming snake pictures in with this story. But yes, thank you, Larry. In the 1940s and in the 50s, on Highway 12 south of Baraboo, was Chuck Nadel's reptile farm. Okay, and tourists would come principally in the summer, and they would see these boa constrictors and rattlesnakes and alligators and turtles and bullfrogs and spiders, you name it, they had it there. Chuck Nadel was a snake, a reptile expert, and he was on a mission to travel the nation and take some of these animals that he collected all around the United States and take them to schools and other places and educate people on these often misunderstood creatures, educated them, hoping to take down the fear factor and make them a little bit familiar with them and talk about their importance in ecosystems. So he had the reptile farm, and his daughter Carrie sent in a story about him, and I said, wait a minute, Carrie, she's a good writer, and I said, could you tell us a little bit more about what it's like to grow up on a reptile farm? And she, hey, okay. I mean, all my friends live nearby. They raised on farms. They raised horses and chickens. We raised snakes and lizards. And so she wrote us a story of what it was like to grow up in a place like that. And she didn't realize it was any different until she was probably in middle school. And her most her dearest memories are from the early 80s when she was a young adult. And that's because Circus World, the museum in Baraboo, which has the world's largest collection of antique historic circus wagons, refurbished the Snake Den wagon, Ringling Brothers, that was used from 1903 to 1930. And they were putting it on parade in the circus parades in Chicago and Milwaukee. It was rebuilt, beautiful, ornate, with carvings all over it. And they're putting it into parades. And it was built with glass sides, and it would have a seated snake charmer. Well, who could they get to handle a 30-pound boa constrictor? Well, Ring-a-ling went the phone. They drafted her, since at age 22 she'd handled many snakes. They put her in this circus wagon. Her mother made her costumes, and her father was in the wagon with her. He had a backup snake in case the 30-pound boa that she was wearing around her neck for 4 hours on parade inside this wagon. In case that snake got antsy, Dad had the spare. So they put her on parade in Chicago, and the snake enchantress couldn't have, she was nearsighted, couldn't wear her glasses, so Dad was in the back telling her where to look and do her parade wave with a snake kind of crawling down her shoulders trying to create a wardrobe malfunction. Nobody in the world, nobody else had that experience, and these are the kind of stories we love to show. One other thing, Stan Brand, do you remember Stan Brand?
And oh, sure.
Outdoors Calling? Well, yeah. We got a photo in there. He had Chuck on often with the snakes, and I love this picture from the 50s where they're handling snakes and Stan Brand's looking, but they're holding Rayovac flashlights from the sponsor. You just got to love that. Good Wisconsin company.
Oh, man. By the way, I should, for those who aren't familiar with our Wisconsin magazine, you come out every couple of months, every 2 months, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. The magazine comes out 6 times a year, and it's 82 pages, solid color, back to front. We try to do things differently from most other magazines, and that is, while they're getting thinner, we're trying to get thicker, do better paper, and so far it has seemed to work. But the magazine is 100% positive. It is done to celebrate the greatest things that are in Wisconsin, and we rely on our readers to give us tips about what's going on in their areas that makes their corner of Wisconsin the very best place to live.
Well, it's always a lot of fun to talk about what you've got in the magazine. There's always so many interesting stories. There's another story. Just as an example, there was a story about that you have every month featuring an Amish farm.
Yes, we have an Amish farm, an Amish diarist, a farm family. They live near the village of Cecil, Shawano County, and we have a diary presented every issue by the farmer named Owen Yoder. He's in his early 60s now, and he tells a story about his family's everyday life. They're on their dairy farm, living without a lot of modern conveniences in Shawano County. Interestingly, Owen is now, they've got 9 children that live in the area. They've got, I think, 31 grandchildren. Owen himself sometimes loses count. You need a lot of hands to help out on the farm. And it's interesting because our readers over the last 7 years have come to consider them almost not only friends but family, and people have it on their bucket list to drive out and look for Owen and meet him. And they will drive 3-4 hours across the state. He'll be out with his workhorses cutting hay or windrowing hay or something out 40, 80 acres away, and they will get out of their cars and stop and walk out there and stop him and talk with him. People feel as if they know him, his wife, all their children. They've got a family bakery, and so very hardworking people in addition to milking all the cows. Right now in his life, Owen's 61 years old. He's got a six-bedroom farmhouse that had been at 100 years old has been added onto. Well, he and his wife are now empty nesters, and they're switching homes with their son and daughter-in-law and their growing family. They're going in the big house and continuing the farm. Owen and Treva are stepping aside into the smaller home they built and will continue with them, and it's their succession plan. And people love visiting with them.
And just finally here, as we're starting to run out of time, this is the perfect time, and you've got a great page that you call Thanks for the Pranks in Honor of April Fool's Day. Have you got, I really enjoy that. Have you got a favorite? Mine had to do with a copy machine, but what was your favorite?
Well, that's a good one, Larry. Gotta love pranks. Having worked in a paper mill in a pipe shop in a heavy industrial area, I kind of there've been a lot of pranks go on in those kind of places, and I like the one about the metal manufacturing plant where there was one man by the name of Mel who would stand there and look at himself in the mirror and fix his hair and just was so taken with his good looks and would tell anybody who listened that the ladies were saying, "My, you're good looking," and he just had to prank a guy like that. So what the guys in the shop did was he had a shop apron, as they all did, and so they took to shortening the collar strap on his apron an inch every other day. And they watched him, everyone was in on it, and they watched him struggling to pull this on. Finally, he didn't figure it out. He lengthened it with a piece of wire. And the comments started coming back to him, "Mel, your head seems a little bigger these days." Anyway, he finally went out and got a haircut because he couldn't fit in it. So, gotta love it.
Well, Mike, it's always a pleasure. Our Wisconsin, the April-May edition out now for 2019. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry, for having us. It's always fun.
Mike Bino, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. If you just type Our Wisconsin Magazine in, you're going to find out all kinds of good information about it and get you right to the magazine itself with Mike Bino. And it was great to kind of end on a prank because coming up, you know what day this is. It's April Fool's Day, and we're going to be talking about April Fool's Day. People have been doing it for a long, long time. And a couple of experts, Jonathan Winnes and Ember Canely, are guests next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.